This morning, as John said, we're going to continue to worship the Lord through testimonies. Most weeks, we worship the Lord by opening up the scriptures and learning from the scriptures and listening to the Spirit as we open the Word together. This morning, we're going to worship by hearing testimonies. And maybe hearing testimonies isn't something you always connect with worship. A lot of times when we say worship, we really mean music. But if we look through scripture, God's people worship him through testimony throughout scripture. God also commands his people, reminds his people to share their testimony. He chastises them and rebukes them when they don't share their testimony or remember their testimony. So we feel like this is an important part of not only body life, but also worshiping God as well. So you're going to hear from four brothers and sisters in Christ this morning and hear their testimonies. Psalm 107 tells us, "Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His steadfast love endures forever. Let the redeemed of the Lord say so." We can't just sit and be thankful we're redeemed. We're also supposed to say so. So we have some stories of how God has redeemed, how God has done his work, and how folks have walked in the Spirit even through difficulty. So first I'm going to invite Peter to come on up. There's a mic here ready for you. So as Peter is getting settled up here, Peter and I have known each other for a while. We got connected here at a community group at Grace 18 years ago. We called the church office. We didn't know anyone, but wanted to get in a community group. And so they sent us information on a community group, and we showed up in someone's living room, and we did not know anyone. That is suboptimal. Part of my job here at Grace is to keep that from happening to you. But the Spirit worked through that, and we were not the only ones that was their first week at a new community group. Peter and his wife Amanda were there as their first time as well, not knowing anyone as well. So first point about that story is that community, very important. Secondly, I've known these guys for a long time, before any of us had children. Peter wants to share a little bit about what God did in his family in a particular season, but first, why don't you introduce the rest of your family to us?
Sure, and that was 2005. It's been 20 years this year.
Oh my gosh.
We're old enough that we're forgetting how long we've known each other. I'm Peter Chittister. My wife and I moved here in 2005 from Ames, Iowa. We both graduated there with her undergrad. We came for her to do some additional school at the University of Iowa. We came here without any kids, me without a job, let alone a career. And now we've been here 20 years this year, minus a five-year hiatus. So we have a senior, Abby. We have a freshman, Olivia. We have a sixth grader who I think is serving somewhere else right now, Savannah, and then a fifth grader, Jack.
So there was a time in you guys' life when you moved away from Iowa City in the last 20 years and lived in Mississippi, and God was at work there, but you faced some challenges. So tell us more about that.
That we did. So one of the things that was really difficult about our move to Mississippi was what we moved away from. When we moved to Iowa City in 2005, we didn't really know anybody, didn't know what I was going to do for work. We knew what Amanda was going to do for school. We were in search of community, of a church. Those are kind of the first two things that we looked for when we moved here. And I think it was, maybe September or October when we first went to the Isabel community group together. Yeah, so it was, I think, within our first month here that we came to Grace for the first time, and we felt like this is where we wanted to be, not only to attend, but also we felt really drawn to serve here. But over the next 2005 through 2013, over the next 8 years, So the groups that we went to multiplied, and we went from having no kids to, I can't even count all the kids that came out of the iterations of that fellowship group. I think by the time we left, the one that we were in had maybe like 12 adults and 15 kids, and the eldest was Abby, and she was in kindergarten. So
also suboptimal, yes. By the way.
Yes. But that was what we moved away from. We moved away from friends whom we really loved, from a church that we served at. We really felt cared for here, and we moved somewhere where we didn't know anybody. We moved far away from our families. Both of our parents live in Iowa here, and work was really, really difficult. Our kids were going into, so Abby had just finished kindergarten. Then we had a preschooler. Savannah wasn't one yet. And kind of during our transition as we were moving, Jack was on the way. So Amanda was pregnant with a first grader, a preschooler, and a toddler when we moved down there. And I was working really long hours. We didn't know anybody, and we were really lonely. Kind of similar to what we did when we moved here, the first thing that we looked for was a church. We went to a few places. We really didn't feel like, between the teaching and the way the church was structured, that anywhere really felt like home. About 3 months into our time in northern Mississippi, I got a call from our realtor, who had no reason to call us and follow up, just asking how we liked our house. And we said, you know, house is doing great. Next question, like everybody in the South asks, is, have you found a church yet? And I said, you know, we've been to a few places. We've been going every week, but really haven't found a place that we've felt like we're at home yet. And he invited me to come to church with him and kind of with his group of friends. They're about the same age as us, but I think there was maybe within the group of friends one couple who was married and then a bunch of singles who are kind of starting their professional lives. Anyhow, he went on to rattle off five or six of the things that we had specifically like identified as really important things that we felt like characteristics of a church that we wanted to be in terms of a church that taught the Bible systematically, one that was governed by elders rather than having kind of like a pastor, a CEO model, one that had a children's ministry that had both and that also had like an international missions focus, but also wanted to serve the community locally. And also that just, we live just south of Memphis. We wanted to go to a church that reflected the diversity of the community. And it's surprisingly difficult to find one there. And he checked off each one of those boxes for us. And so even though it was a 30-minute drive each way, we started going there. And after we went, he invited us to lunch and then to dinner to his house with his group of friends. He was like, we just get together and barbecue and watch football basically every Sunday evening. And that became our family for the next 5.5 years. So they were the people who came and visited us. They were the first people who came and visited us in the hospital after Jack was born. There were people who just loved and cared for us. You talked about how it was suboptimal to have a small group where you have nothing but people who were at exactly the same stage in life. We were kind of the only group of people who had kids. So they got to see the utter chaos of what it's like to have three and then four little kids. But having a group of young adults like that also, each of our kids kind of got to match up with somebody and have kind of like a bad aunt or a bad uncle who specifically ministered to them, plan everything from like planning birthday parties for our kids to just out of the blue, hey, we bought tickets to the circus. Can we take your older girls to the circus after church on Sunday? Things like that. So they became our family and our people who we got to see them match up with their spouses, get married, and have kids by the time we left there in Memphis.
So you've seen God provide community for you when you moved here. You saw God provide through the church and through community there, and then you moved back here. And how long have you guys been back from Mississippi?
We moved back in 2018.
Okay.
So you do the math.
Not going to happen. I'm not good at math when I'm not in front of 500 people.
7 years this summer, I think.
Thank you. Yeah. So you saw God provide in those various seasons of life. How do you see God working in that same way now that you're back established here in Iowa?
Oh, there are a couple of ways. I think one of them is just really enjoying seeing my kids growing up. I think that it's really neat to see God work in the lives of our kids and see like the decisions that they're making, the way that they're growing in spiritual maturity. And then the second one is just to be old enough to be where I can start to see where some of the struggles that we have experienced, how God has used those in our lives to transform our character and to shape us into who he wants to be and to make us depend on him more. He still has a lot of work to do in my life. But it's really neat to see the way that he's used some of those things that were really difficult in the moment, and it at times just like excruciating to really change us and to even like provide encouragement to people later.
Let's give Peter a hand and praise God for the Chittister family. Dan is next. Dan, come on up. Dan Chatham is going to come up and talk to us a little bit about his journey through parenting. He and his wife, Amy. Amy was supposed to join us here this morning, but she is not feeling well, so you have to speak on behalf of your wife on all things. So tell us about your family. Tell us about yourself.
Yeah. So hi, I'm Dan Chatham. My wife, Amy, as Jason mentioned, we have a daughter, Ella, who is a senior. We have a daughter, Lucy, who's in eighth grade. And a son, Henry, who is in fifth grade.
So how long have you guys been in this area?
So we initially moved to the Iowa City area. I went to law school at the University of Iowa back in the mid-2000s. We moved away for a year, and we've been back since basically 2008. And we've been coming here since about 2010.
So what are some ways that you guys have had to lean into the Spirit's work as you try to raise your kids in a godly way?
So our story, our journey is a little bit unique. Everybody's is unique. We initially, when our oldest daughter was born, Ella, we were not attending church at all. I had gone to law school, and when we got married, we've been married for 20 years now, we were not attending church really at all. I was focused on school, and Amy was not necessarily raised in a church home. And so it just wasn't a priority. And so as we're invited to Grace and started coming here about 15 years ago, it's really changed our focus in how we approach our kids. And so we went from not thinking about it at all to thinking about it a little bit, and then as we got more and more plugged in and more growing in our own faith and our own walk and seeing that as important and realizing how central that should be to everything that we do, it has really helped to instill that in our kids a little bit, as much as we can. And so the way I look at it is you can't give something that you don't have. And so us growing in our faith and in our walk with God and in how we interact in our spiritual practices, we can give that to our kids because we are engaging in those behaviors ourselves. And so that's been a really strong thing for us, is to trust in Him and in the Spirit to lead us, and then to have our kids see that and then to share that with them.
So what have been some obstacles to that taking place, or what have been some obstacles to seeing that accomplished in your kids' lives?
Me, basically sin and you know, all the different things in your own life that get in the way. I think for me and for my wife, it's one of those things where when you look at the world and you interact with the world, you know, our kids go to public school. We try to engage in the world out large. It's really sometimes very tempting for us to want to like live in a Christian bubble and not be out in the world. But it is really important, we believe, to engage in the culture. And so it's easy to get caught up in social media, get caught up in your own life, get caught up in the world and the way that the world views things and reacts to things and have gut reactions to the issues and struggles that we have in life to just react the way that the world does. And so for me, a lot of it's control or self-righteousness or, you know, just wanting to be, you know, have all the answers. And so when our kids have struggles, you know, I just want to rush in and try to fix and try to be the guy who knows everything or has exactly the right wisdom. And I've really learned over time that that's typically not the best way to respond. And so my own self-righteousness and trying to put that aside and to really listen and to walk with our kids and hear them out, this is not stuff that I've learned through myself. It's been through watching my wife. She's far better at that. She's supposed to be up here and would have been a better demonstration of this. But it is something that over the years that I think has grown. But our own view of self and pride really gets in the way of that. And so we've tried over the years to become better about acknowledging that.
How do you see God working in your kids today?
In different ways in all three. We are blessed to have three kids who are temperamentally very, very different from one another. That's challenging because you have to respond to each of them in sort of different ways, but while still trying to maintain a standard, so to speak. So it has been really encouraging for us with all of them to just see the different ways that they react and that they are growing. Some of them are more overt. Our oldest daughter, you know, is on the worship team here and sings and uses her talents in that way, and that's been extremely gratifying to us. But we also try to, in those same situations, when they're using their gifts, to try to instill the reason for doing that. We've been given these gifts for a reason, and it's not to come up and sing because you have a beautiful voice and people come up to you after service and tell you, hey, you know, great job singing, right? It's because you're there to worship. But we have to do that in different ways with all of our kids because they're in different activities. They have different ways that they interact with the world. And so I talked about my own self-righteousness. Their self-righteousness can get built up in that too. And so it's been really encouraging to see even our shy kid, very, very shy kid, who would be mortified if she had heard that I was actually referring to her right now, to see the ways that she has grown in interacting with her friends. She's very, very shy, does not want to talk to adults or anything else like that. But when she's been bringing kids with her to her friends from school to youth group, which for someone who really doesn't interact is about as introverted as you could get, she's been bringing these friends in and they're hearing the word in ways that they haven't. So that's been really encouraging to us as well.
Lastly, what are some very practical practices that you guys have done in the home to keep the gospel at the center? I need some help here. It looks like the kids are going to be at home a lot this week, if you've looked at the forecast. Any like practical help you could give us for keeping the gospel center?
Well, one of the things Amy and I talked about was trying to spend together time, but I guess this week you're going to
spend
plenty of
time. There you go. God provides.
There's so many different activities that we have, and like I said, they go in different directions, they have different talents, and so they're involved in different activities. But really trying to focus on not only are we attending those things and going to them, but talking to them before or after, and really focusing in. As I said, I'm prone to self-righteousness, and so it's kind of a thing that I try to instill in them when we talk about it, is, hey, if you're going to play this basketball game or baseball game, in what way can you show God's love to your teammates, to the umpires, the referees, to the opponents? If you're singing or doing something at your school, whatever it is, you're going to see some disappointments, right? We've dealt with a lot of different disappointments with our kids over the years. If they're in sports or other activities, it's not always going to go the way that you want it to go. But instilling in them the idea that that whatever way it goes, it's a part of God's plan, and that your role in that, God has put you there to show Christ's love to others, even in that situation. And so that's been a practice that we've tried to speak out loud as much as we can to try to instill that in them. So that's the way to interact with the world around them.
Great. Let's thank God for the Chatham family and the work he's doing in them. Going to ask Damien to come on up. Damien, come on up and join us. Damien's going to share a little bit about his life and God's work in his life, particularly serving in the military. Why don't you start out just by telling us about yourself and your family?
Good morning. I'm Damien Piggert. My wife sitting over there, Vanessa, of 25 years, and my son, Alejandro, he's 23, and my 24-year-old daughter, Caroline, is in the audience as well. We've been coming here a couple years. I just retired from 28 years in the Air Force when I was a young boy growing up about 40 miles from here. Thank you. I had no idea I was going to go into the military and that was going to shape my life experience. A fellow classmate from Benton Community came and spoke, and about nine of my classmates and I all went off and joined various branches of the service. I was the one that got the memo and ended up staying in the longest for whatever reason, a glutton for punishment. But my experience in the military really led me to Christ. And it put a lot of very difficult and some would argue, traumatic experiences that ended up serving as just beautiful lessons of God's beauty. To focus on, you know, even in an unjust world where you're seeing a lot of difficult things, if you look carefully, it's like those pictures where you look and you don't see it at first, and then you see God's face in it, and you recognize the beauty of that. And of my 25 years with my wife, I have lived apart from her for 5 years, four of that in combat deployments, and that was hard. That was really hard, especially for my young children who were accustomed to Dad going away on 365-day deployments and trying to count the jelly beans, taking one out of the jar each day until I got home. And my wife, I put her through the ringer with a lot of phone calls that ended with a mortar attack and the call going dead, and then maybe 12 hours later I would call her, let her know I was still alive. So there were lots of challenges, but again, in early 2000, we both grew up Catholic, and so neither of us really had a close and meaningful relationship with Christ. I mean, I was an altar boy for 10 years, but I could recite Mass. I would do it, and I'd usually get scolded by my mom because she would see me up there doing that on. But when we were at Holloman Air Force Base in the early 2000s, when the towers came down and it changed my entire trajectory of my military career, we started attending Protestant services, and God put a couple people in my life that brought me to the Lord, and my wife and I became born-again Christians. And unbeknownst to me, the timing of that was perfect, because a mess of deployments and a lot of very difficult experiences were about to follow. And that relationship with Christ and that understanding of his blessing got me through those, especially my first very difficult deployment in Iraq in 2007. While I was there, I was a volunteer in the emergency room. And so for 5.5 months, I was just immersed in death and traumatic injuries and suffering. And a lot of people around me would go to very dark places, bitterness. And it would be easy to do that with what I was seeing. But it's amazing how God will show you these beautiful little things. You know, when you're in a room and a 23-year-old man is in the last hour of his life, and the chaplain asks him if he knows Christ, and you're just a fly on the wall helping out in there, but you get to witness something that is both sorrowful and tragic because his family has no idea back in America what's happening, but you witness him accept Christ. And but an hour after that, as they're zipping him up in the bag, he is with Jesus. And so I went back to my room and I wept, but I realized the beauty of that, how difficult that will be for his family in the coming days. But one day they're going to see him, and his body is much more whole than I saw it when it was there. But there were a lot of experiences like that day after day. And something that helped me was in our compound, you had concrete blast walls everywhere, and on those were painted Metallica, The Punisher, phrases. But interesting enough, someone on some previous deployment before me had painted Psalm 23, the entirety of it. And so for 5.5 months, coming home from very difficult evenings of seeing mass casualty events and traumatic experiences, I would stand before Psalm 23 and memorize that. And I still have that. So when we started memorizing that this month.
Yeah, you win. You won that challenge. He wins the Psalm 23 memorization challenge.
It helped me get through a lot of experiences. And after the deployments, I told my wife about my own, close calls, being on a helicopter, taking a lot of ground fire. And as you're clenching against that seat really tight, and your children are 10,000 miles away, and they have no idea that Dad is really close to leaving this world, you're reciting, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. And you'd see the suffering, and you'd see the difficult experiences. But I'd come back, and I'd look at that verse, and I'd put my hands against that wall, and I'd cry like a baby. And I'm not typically an emotional person. I was a little hesitant to share this testimony, but I got to see God's goodness on that deployment and all the subsequent deployments. And what it helped me was anytime something that felt so unjust and unfair would happen to me or people around me, it would help me. That was God's plan for you. There's a reason. There's a reason. One time I got bumped from a helicopter flight in January of 2007 because that helicopter did not come back. And I told my wife about it 4 years later when we were standing in Section 60 at Arlington. And 5 feet away from me was the widow and the two children of one of the people that was on the helicopter. I knew her story. I knew her husband's story. She had no idea who I was. But what seemed unfair at that one brief moment in time was God saying, I'm not done with you yet. There's more to you. You have a family to go back to and children and a wife and a testimony to share with people. And then further on in life, there's just been many things. We're here in great part because my daughter was supposed to go to the Air Force Academy. And on her first day there, they threw her out for some stupid medical thing. I mean, just silly. But because of that, she came to Iowa. And she's now sitting next to her husband. And our grandson's in the nursery. And we're here because of this. So I was so bitter that day when the Air Force called and said, your daughter's not worthy. But that was God's plan. And so that's been our experience since coming to Christ, both my wife and I, is we've experienced so much difficult situations, but we've come to see God's goodness in each of it. It's part of his plan.
I had several questions for Damien to bring all that out, but I just thought I'd let him cook. So I was also going to ask the church to thank you for your service of our country, but they jumped right in and caught that. So thank you. Thank you for serving our country. And we appreciate it, and we love to hear what God has done in your life as your church family. Let's give Damien and his family a hand. All right, Madeline is going to come up. Madeline's going to come share her war stories with us now. Madeline's going to come on up. Madeline's going to tell us a little bit about herself. So, Madeline, you grew up here at Grace, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about your life kind of as a kid and growing up here in this church.
Sure. Yeah. So my family started attending Grace when I was about 9. We joined a community group soon after that. Yeah, it's just been a wonderful experience. I was on staff actually for 4 years until I started student teaching, and my mom is actually on staff as well. I absolutely love the sense of community. This is rare. I don't know if everyone knows that. But you go to other churches and they have their own thing, but I walk in here and I just feel like I'm at home. And yeah, it has a very familiar smell. that helps.
It's moldy carpet. Just to be clear.
It's fine. Don't worry about it. but yeah, I just have loved it here. I think a lot of my formative years were in youth group. That's why I decided to end up serving as well. I started coming to youth group when I was 12 years old, and I had so many leaders and other students that just welcomed me and taught me the gospel, and it was in a way that I probably wouldn't have listened to my parents. Like, my mom was saying all the same things at home, but I rolled my eyes when she said it. But when Liz Hagedorn says it, you're like, oh my gosh, that's so smart. and so, yeah, it's just been a joy to be a part of this church.
Corrine, do you want to come up and tell any stories about Madeline? Okay. Then we'll keep going. Madeline, when we ask if you'd be willing to share your testimony, season that you thought of that you would like to share about was a challenging time you faced a couple of years ago. So what was taking place during that time that was challenging?
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, 2022, that June, I had just wrapped up my second year of college. A couple of war-like classes where my faith was really challenged. And I randomly one night started having panic attacks related to my faith. So just a lot of like, this isn't real. God's not there for you. He doesn't care about you. These people are lying to you. Those sorts of things. And they were not coming from me. I won't say entirely that it was spiritual warfare, because I've discovered that there were some medical reasons for it as well. But I would say that the enemy was definitely trying to use that to turn me away from Christ. Yeah, and so it was just a really dark, difficult time. I think one of the most challenging things was feeling like I was going crazy. Like, what is happening to me? I had always, I forgot to talk about this earlier, but I had always prided myself on my intellectual ability. School came very easy to me. I had just been gifted in so many ways. And then to kind of have that taken away so suddenly was really earth-shattering. Like, yeah, I'm one of the, yeah, I don't know. I'm one of those people that struggles with depression now. And I never understood what that was like until it happened to me.
First off, thank you for sharing your story. Thanks for just the courage to share in your struggle. What are some ways that God intervened and helped you through that challenging season?
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest things was I started seeing a Christian counselor. And it was just really nice to be able to sit down with somebody who didn't know me and was just looking at it from like a, these are what your thoughts are. Let's work on how we address them. But then also what was so huge for me was my community. My family has been so supportive, but also my community group. It was really hard to show up and be like, I don't have it all together anymore. Like you said, I was a church kid my whole life, and all of a sudden, like, I know all the answers, but when I talk about it, I start to feel like I'm losing my mind. And so they were just there for me. They were like, yeah, this is what it is. And I honestly wish I would have shared more. Like I said, I am a real like intellectual pride person. and so I used to think that like it was morally wrong to share these deep struggles with someone else, because it's like, well, now it's their problem too. But that was what they were asking me to do. And so, yeah, it was just incredible to see how when I allowed myself, not allowed, I already needed people, but when I allowed myself to need people, the ways that God showed up in that need and how it really mirrors him and his character as a shepherd and as helper in allowing myself to need other people.
How do you see God still helping you today? As a fellow anxiety struggler, it's not something that's just like, oh, remember that time I was anxious? Mm-hmm. We really need God's help day in and day out. So how do you see him helping you today?
Yeah, I think I learned so much from that time about how my faith is not supposed to be this like neat and tidy, just easy, simple thing. It is simple, but it's also like messy, because we're human and I'm messy. And yeah, he just showed me, and he has continued to show me, like, I can have peace while my brain and my body are not listening to me. Like my emotions are not equated to my faith. And so even when my heart is racing and I'm like not fully believing what I say I'm believing, I'm still going to choose to preach the gospel to myself, to remember who Jesus is. And yeah, I'm just going to continue to focus on the one whose intellect never fails. I think that's been a big thing too. Like when my brain is not working, which hopefully we've all had that. It's not just me. God is always there, always wise, always steadfast. And yeah, and he's for me. I think that's the other thing is in that season, my brain and everything that was going on was telling me that this God that you've believed in your whole life isn't there for you. And when you read the gospel story, you see a God that cares deeply about every single one of us, enough to enter our mess, right? And so then I was like, well, I'm messy, but the cross was messy. And so, yeah, it's just brought so much freedom, I think, to know that, yeah, it's about him.
Preach. Thank you. Thank you, sister, for sharing your story. The band's going to come up and lead us in another song. You guys, why don't you go ahead and come on up? Madeline shared her story with me last week, last Sunday, and ever since I've been thinking about the end of the book of Job, where Job loses everything, questions God, his friends question God, he doesn't know which way is up and which way is down, but at the end of the book of Job in chapter 40, he says, I had heard of you, but now my eyes have seen you. Our struggle makes us feel like God is far, but actually he is the good shepherd that's walking through it with us. Please stand with me. We're going to sing about the God we've been talking about this morning. Receive these words of benediction from Romans 15:13 as we go. May the God of hope fill you with all joy and all peace as you trust in him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Spirit. Amen. Go in grace, and we'll see you soon.